the Coast Guard received a request from Promec Air to assist in a search for a overdue aircraft.
A float plane crashes near Ketchikan with 9 people on board. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 25th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, the communication mishaps leading up to the military's largest training exercise in Alaska.
The miscommunication on Northern Edge has been extraordinary.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
A Promec float plane with 9 people on board apparently crashed near Ella Lake in Misty Fjords National Monument outside of Ketchikan. U.S. Coast Guard Petty Officer First Class Kelly Parker says the plane was reported overdue this afternoon.
The Coast Guard received a request from Promec Air to assist in a search for a overdue aircraft. And so the Coast Guard was in the process of launching a helicopter from Air Station Sitka and a vessel from Station Ketchikan. When a Temsco helicopter crew located the aircraft on the cliffside of Ella Lake. So at this time, Alaska State Troopers are coordinating the response at the site with the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad.
There is no information yet on the condition of the people on board. The rescue operation was still underway as of late this afternoon. An employee who answered the phone at Promec Air says the company is not commenting at this time. Promec is a Ketchikan-based company that offers flight seeing tours and charters. For the last week and a half, the military has been conducting Northern Edge, the largest training exercise held in Alaska. About 6,000 troops from all branches of the military are in Anchorage and the Gulf of Alaska. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, environmentalists and coastal communities say communication about the exercise has been inadequate.
Watching from a roof at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, fighter planes take off one after another, arcing widely before disappearing in the distance. It's too loud to hear much, so Lieutenant Colonel Tim Babinski ducks inside to explain all that's gone into planning Northern Edge over the last year.
It sounds like a lot of people and a lot of assets to make that effort, but it's truly worthwhile, and in a lot of ways it's a bargain to make sure we're prepared for anything we're called upon to do.
The last Northern Edge cost around $11 million, and though figures for this year aren't tallied yet, Babinski thinks the price tag will probably be similar. A big point of the exercise is getting soldiers from all 4 branches of the military experience in unfamiliar terrain, logging hour after hour of hands-on practice with some of the most sophisticated machinery in the nation's arsenal.
I was here in 2008 and 2009 as a pilot, and it's really like nothing that you can replicate anywhere else. Quite honestly, as a relatively new pilot back then, it was almost mind-boggling.
As for what the training actually entails, like what all those F-22s and F-16s were swooping off to go do, it's a little vague.
I can't get too much into specific scenarios due to the nature of the exercise.
That's been one of the biggest frustrations with Northern Edge for folks in coastal communities that held protests leading up to the event. For conservation biologist Rick Steiner, the military did not give the public information it's entitled to.
Now, what we want to know is what they did this week and last week in the Gulf.
In April, Steiner says he started asking the Navy what was planned for Northern Edge, but couldn't get answers.
They all point the finger the other way and say, go to this other agency for the information. And the fact that they were not willing to disclose exactly what was planned for Northern Edge 2015 is a real concern. This is the public's Gulf of Alaska.
Without clear information of what was in store, advocates and community members looked at a 2011 environmental impact statement that detailed the maximum scope of allowable activities. And that document can look alarming. For example, under the EIS, the Navy is cleared to use over 26,000 gun shells during Northern Edge, along with plenty of other ordnance. Steiner says people saw the figures and assumed the worst. By the time he got a response to a Freedom of Information Act request, he saw the actual numbers were far below the allowable threshold.
They're not doing any ship sinking missiles, 1,000-pound, 500-pound bombs, heavyweight torpedoes, which are permitted for them to use.
For Steiner, there are still some troubling unknowns, chiefly how much mid-range sonar naval ships will use. The location and time of year make sonar a threat to the health of some species of whale. I raised those concerns with Commander Bryant Trost, standing by a giant artillery gun on the deck of a Navy destroyer docked at the port of Anchorage.
We were out there doing some anti-submarine warfare exercises, using our sonar, work with the other ships to, establish and work with our procedures.
Trost was forthcoming where he could be about the Navy's observers spotting marine mammals.
Anecdotally, I could say is probably over 100. We saw whales all the time, and not during the sonar operations. Just sonar operations. There were a few that we stopped for. But, generally we saw them and, we're not active, and so we just observed them, record what we saw, and then kept moving on.
But there were limits to what Trost would disclose.
The sonar, because of the capabilities limitations I would reveal, I don't want to talk about how much time we had it on. We did use it, but, for fairly short duration time periods.
Northern Edge has been happening in Alaska since the mid-70s, but its cancellation in 2013 is part of why critics think wires got so severely crossed. That four-year gap means a lot of staff turnover in the military. Captain Anastasia Wassum is one of the public information officers who coordinated this year's exercise for the first time, managing communications between the public and branches of the military that can sometimes seem like they're speaking different languages.
It wasn't a breakdown in the system. It was just different than what we were anticipating based on previous years. We've never seen this level of concern or controversy before in previous Northern Edges, at least not, from what I've been told.
Once protests started this spring, military organizers attended community meetings in Homer, Kodiak, and Cordova.
I think most people, once they heard, what we were actually doing in Northern Edge versus what it stated was allowable in the EIS, I think it did lessen their concerns a lot. It definitely did help, and especially having someone there in person.
Wassum says her plan for Northern Edge 17 is to begin communicating earlier with communities. But for Rick Steiner, the fact that he had to file a Freedom of Information request with the Navy is evidence that leaving public information up to the military isn't enough.
The miscommunication on Northern Edge has been extraordinary, and it's caused a lot of concerns, unnecessary and some necessary, in coastal communities. So I think things just slipped through the cracks. But my first query was to the Navy, and they were not extremely forthcoming with exactly what was planned, which we finally determined through the FOIA process.
Northern Edge wraps up on Friday, June 26th. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
More than 16,000 Alaskans will keep their health insurance subsidies under a ruling issued today by the United States Supreme Court. The court ruled 6-3 in favor of the argument that the Affordable Care Act allows residents in states like Alaska to access federal subsidies on healthcare.gov. Lawyers for the plaintiffs in King versus Burwell case argued the law only allowed for subsidies in states that established their own health insurance exchanges. Lori Wing Heyer directs Alaska's Division of Insurance. She's relieved by today's decision.
We were prepared, we think, with any way the Supreme Court would have ruled, with a backup plan, but are very pleased that they ruled in favor of Burwell.
About 90% of Alaskans who buy insurance on healthcare.gov receive a subsidy that averages more than $500 a month. In a press release, Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's glad Alaskans won't lose their subsidies, but maintains the Affordable Care Act is bad for the state. Senator Dan Sullivan calls today's Supreme Court decision disappointing. Congressman Don Young says the court made the wrong choice. In written statements, both lawmakers focused their comments on their opposition to the law as a whole rather than their position on the subsidies. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a gallery in Anchorage that helps artists with developmental disabilities.
We work with people who maybe can't connect on a level that I take for granted, and so art gives them a way to express what they're feeling.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The latest figures show 21 new fires were logged in Alaska yesterday. That brings the total to nearly 300, which are burning almost 945 square miles. The Middle Kuskokwim communities of Aniak and Tuathpaluk are evacuating at-risk people as wildfires approach. They're sending infants, elders, and those with lung problems to Bethel as they expect heavy smoke over the next couple of days. As the 2,500-acre North Aniak fire bears down, 30 people have already loaded a flight to Bethel this afternoon, and another 17 are set to go out later in the evening. Another fire, the Mission Creek Blaze, is within 2 miles of Tuathpaluk. Frances Mitchell with the State Division of Forestry says the fires are threatening both communities.
Aniak has been. The fire is on the north side of the river still, but still watching it closely. There are fire personnel there. Tuathpaluk is still under threat, and that fire is probably going to come more to life again today or move that south end of it probably.
A Salt Lake City Type 2 crew arrived in Aniak yesterday. The Sockeye fire forced evacuation of hundreds of sled dogs from Willow area kennels earlier this month, and now new fires have resulted in the movement of huskies from a remote kennel north of Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Yukon Quest champion Brent Sass remains at his wildfire-threatened compound in Eureka, but his dogs are safe in Fairbanks. The Baker and North Fork wildfires are burning in the Eureka area west of the Elliott Highway between mileposts 131 and 137. Dog handler Tim Muto says Sass was away working Tuesday as flames began advancing, and he had to scramble to get dog boxes on trucks and move the animals.
Luckily, I had a friend out there with me, and she was able to help. And then our friend Cody Straith, who's another musher, he's a Quest musher, he cruised out there on his four-wheeler and helped us load dogs, and he ended up driving one of the other trucks out.
Muto says the group of dogs trucked to a property Sass has in the Gulfstream Valley includes several young puppies.
7 puppies that are now they're 4 days old, and we have 4 other puppies that are a month old, so probably 60 dogs total, something around there.
Muto says he's impressed with how all the dogs handled the hectic trip.
Yeah, it's a lot of energy and a lot of stuff going on for them, and for them to just kind of be able to relax in the box for the whole ride. And it was good. They helped make it smooth, too.
Muto says the dogs have settled in well in Fairbanks. He says he has no phone connection with Sass and Eureka, but suspects he's working to fire prep the property.
Knowing Brent, he's moving at 1,000,000 miles an hour, doing 500,000 things at once, getting the job done.
Muto says the Eureka property has a creek and pond on site that can aid in firefighting. He adds that as of Wednesday, neighbors and fellow mushers Rick and Kelly Swenson plan to stay put in Eureka with about 20 dogs. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Card Street fire near Sterling is diminishing, and many evacuees are returning to their homes this week. Across the Central Peninsula, hotels and restaurants that helped with relief efforts are getting back to business as usual. But for one hotel in Soldotna, this isn't the first time they've stepped in to help. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Hooligan's Lodging and Saloon is an unassuming, vaguely frontier-themed hotel off the Sterling Highway in Soldotna. Frances Delisle is sitting in the middle of a puffy couch in the lobby. She's tall and thin and is being leaned on by an enormous, panting, scruffy black dog.
This guy here is my service dog. His name's Maximus. He's a Labradoodle. With a bad hair day.
Normally, you'd find Delisle and Moose in their converted school bus house in Sterling. But now, she's one of more than a dozen people who found shelter here after the Card Street fire evacuations began. She says she got the notice at 2 a.m. She grabbed all of Moose's toys and food and her own medications.
It was funny because I was packing stuff up and throwing it out the back door of the bus, and I couldn't believe it. I was going, I gotta get my mom's ashes. And I just stopped for a minute and I thought, that's ridiculous. You know, why do you get ashes to leave something that's gonna turn to ashes? But I just couldn't leave her behind. Yeah, That's the most important things in my life.
She spent the first night at the emergency shelter at the Sterling Community Center. It was there that she heard about free rooms at Hooligans for evacuees.
It was nice to know because I'm alone. And that's a scary feeling when something like this happens.
April Strand is the hotel manager. She's been working here for almost 10 years and credits owner Molly Poland with the idea to open it up as an emergency shelter.
She's got the biggest heart. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better boss. She's just got a really big heart.
She says being generous is just Molly's way.
She tries really hard to help everybody, you know, not, you know, just here, but in her community. I mean, she's awesome for the fact, I mean, if you look at all that this woman does, I mean, she's a home, hotel owner, raising a family, has a bar, has a restaurant. And she does a lot of amazing things that I don't think she gets enough credit for.
Poland says she was raised to think of others.
It's such a blessing to me that I can help people when they need help.
Last year, she took in more than 100 evacuees and put them up free of charge for days. She gave them meal vouchers for her restaurant and set up a collection point in her lobby for shampoo, deodorant, toothbrushes, books, kids' toys, and pet food. She makes it a point to welcome pets.
And I get it. They're your family. So you can't leave your family behind. You have to bring your family with you when you go.
And that led to some unexpected situations last year, including a pregnant dog who birthed a litter the day after she arrived, and a mama cat with a litter of kittens.
Someone had a goat, and I'm like, no, that's where I draw the line. The goat can hang out outside your room, but the goat's not going in the room.
And it wasn't easy. She says there were some damages that came along with the animals. She had to replace some carpets, shampoo many others, fix scratches on the walls, and this year, she's lost quite a bit of potential income. Guests like Delisle know what Poland's giving up.
This is peak season, and she's right here by the river. I mean, she could be making a lot of money off of our rooms, and she's letting us have them for free.
Poland says she lets the little things go because helping her community in times of trial is the most important thing. And she says maybe it's meant to be. After all, she's been trying to sell Hooligans for years and hasn't been able to. So
maybe this is just what I'm supposed to do.
And she'll do it again if there's a need, though she and all of her guests hope she won't have to. In Soldotna, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Haines residents are being told to boil their drinking water after E. coli was found in the municipal water system. Local officials issued the notice Wednesday after a routine test turned up the bacteria. Haines Borough Manager David Sosa says officials think the contamination might come from a spring that feeds part of the system, or it could be other causes.
It could be a septic system that's leaking into it. There are a number of other options it could be, and we want to make sure we hit the right answer on this.
He says the community's main water source is a lake south of town. If tests show it's clean, it can supply the whole community without the spring-fed system.
What we can do is cut off the water from that system, induce more chlorine into the system, purge the entire system, and then fill the system up. That would take time, but that's the safest and best action we could take for the community.
Residents are being told to boil their water for 2 minutes, which will kill off the bacteria. Some are also using bottled water. E. coli can cause diarrhea, cramps, and vomiting. Young children, older people, and those with weak immune systems can experience kidney failure.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaska's business travelers across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Strolling down D Street in downtown Anchorage, the Spark Studio blends in with the line of shops and galleries. But behind the displays of vivid paintings and sculptures, artists are learning more than just creative expression. Brandon Fernandez presses felting needles into his newest piece of art. He's from Hawaii, and if he doesn't tell you outright, it's reflected in the bright colors of his work.
This is the green, white, brown, red, and blue.
Yeah?
Yes.
Why did you pick this color?
Because I like it.
Fernandez moved to Alaska 21 years ago, but Hawaii is still his home. His connection shines through the bright blue skies and palm trees in his tile and glass mosaic and the pictures of trees in his photography portfolio. Nearby, Deborah Burt, known as D-Burt, shows off her newest work, a massive collage.
This is two people just standing next to each other outside.
In a beautiful blue sky.
In a beautiful sky.
D-Burt's been working on the two-foot-wide collage for about a month and a half, piecing together tiny bits of paper and images of faces cut from magazines. She started taking art classes from the ARC when she was just a teenager. 20 years later, she's still painting. Like most artists, her work is a way to communicate. Spark program director Lacey Stewing says, for some of the artists at the studio, it's one of the only ways. Spark is more than an art space. It's a service for people who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Art helps them communicate. We work with people who are nonverbal. We work with people who can't use all their extremities. We work with people who maybe can't connect on a level that I take for granted. And so art gives them a way to express what they're feeling.
Stewing says the classes range from painting and drawing to stained glass and printmaking, but they go beyond just art. The lessons also focus on helping the students learn how to interact in safe and healthy ways. Each person has different goals for development. Stewing says that requires special training for her teachers.
You have to be a little more patient, kind of, you know, non-verbally see what's going on with the class. And so if somebody's starting to get worked up, maybe they're not, there can be an array of things happening. Maybe the music's too loud, or the person next to them they don't like, or something. And maybe, so, you know, those things manifest themselves in different ways besides just saying, hey, can you turn the music down? Because maybe you can't speak.
But mostly, her teachers are professional artists who are guiding other professional artists. For Stewing, it's important that the teachers understand the process and struggles of creating high-quality art so they can pass that on to the students who have the same goals. Students like Andre Hogg.
So what's your name?
Hogg doesn't talk much, but he draws and paints prolifically. He opens a drawer and invites me to look inside. It's filled with stacks and stacks of brightly colored paintings and drawings of cats, with a few dogs and dinosaurs thrown in. Like the teachers around him, he's had solo exhibits and sold his work around the community. He's just another artist in another gallery in downtown Anchorage. In a cabin 26 miles from downtown Juneau, former territorial governor Ernest Greening wrote the book The State of Alaska, making a case for statehood several years before it would happen. The cabin started out as a summer getaway for the family and later became a year-round residence. Now, more than six decades later, the historic cabin is being used as an oasis for Alaskan artists. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Juneau artist Constance Baltuck paints on the rocky shoreline of Lynn Canal. The legs of her easel are getting wet from the incoming tide. On the canvas, details emerge from the colors.
This is the barnacles and the kelp and the mussels. They're just so beautiful, the way they interact and cling to the rocks.
Baltuck is the first artist of a pilot program at the cabin run by Alaska State Parks. Park Superintendent Mike Eberhardt says the Ernest Greening State Historic Park received $30,000 to run an artist-in-residence program for 2 years. All the artists are required to hold a community workshop and contribute a piece of art to the park. Eberhardt hopes the program will generate more interest in the site.
Whatever art comes out of there, whether it be written or music or paintings, using that to publicize the state park system. And with notoriety, hopefully comes additional funding, comes additional support.
Eight artists from across the state applied for the residency, and all were admitted for the startup year. Each will stay in the cabin for up to 2 weeks through September. For Baltuck, the park has been one inspiration after another.
This place is just alive. Everywhere you look, there's something flowering, jumping. creeping around in the woods, flying past a window.
And she's trying to capture as much of it as possible. Baltuk describes it as gathering starts, the beginnings of paintings she'll finish later. Inside the cabin, her works in progress lie on a bench or lean against walls.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11 this first week, plus I'm doing a series of little wildflower drawings. This is supercharged for me. I'm going to have to go back to town and get more canvas because I'm just about used up what I brought that I thought would last the whole 15 days.
Baltuk has done other artist residencies. She's been in the middle of the desert at Arizona's Petrified Forest National Park, in sand dunes above the Arctic Circle in Alaska's Kobuk Valley National Park, and once spent 3 months in Norway. Baltuk says each has given her windows into different lives. For this residency, when she's not on the rocks painting or at the easel inside the cabin, she's on the deck sipping coffee. She watches people fishing and...
the eagles, they're sometimes right up in these trees right over here. And the evening is when they just swoop back and forth. And, you know, I can see whales and it's always changing. Like whether it's a beautiful sunset or just the clouds, how deep they settle on the mountains or if there are any, or if you can see the mountains at all.
More than once, Baltuk calls the residency a gift. A gift of no distractions, no internet, no phone ringing, nobody waiting on you. It's also a gift of time.
It's so neat to settle in to an experience of observing nature for like hours, just looking at the same scene for hours and just knowing you have that time. There's no rushing out here.
The only concern, Baltuk says, is the tide. When the water comes up by your feet, it's time to move. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Leila Carey in Ketchikan, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shady Grove Oliver in Soldotna, and Ed Schoenfeld and Lisa Fu in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer, and I'm Ann Hellman. Have a lovely evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Baby salmon live here, right in our backyards and neighborhoods. Go out, explore, and take the Baby Salmon Challenge. For more information, go to babysalmon.fish. This announcement is sponsored by the Salmon Project. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.